Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
It's football season and you gotta keep up with the action. Listen in to Pushing the Pile, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network with Mike Renner, Kyle Long, and now me, JP Acosta, for smart analysis of everything between the lines. With four episodes a week, Sunday night recaps, film review, power tiers, and weekly previews, you will know ball. Stick with us until one team lifts the Lombardi. Follow and listen to Pushing the Pile on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Come on, let's get going now.
From KMOX Sports.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
This is the Gray Bar Sports Open Live. Gray Bar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Here we go. Welcome in. It is a Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Have you for a full 2 hours tonight. We've got that today and tomorrow before we're back to shorter shows on Thursday for Thursday Night Football. And it's great to be able to be with you. We've got a lot to get to today. We've got a couple guests who are going to be on the program. We'll talk with Benjamin Hockman coming up in about 10 minutes or so. Next hour, we'll talk some Mizzou football and just everything that's going on with them coming off that loss this past weekend to Vanderbilt, the quarterback situation, everything that they've got going on and what it's going to look like moving forward. Zach Sweet, who is part of the team at the Columbia Missourians, going to join us next hour to talk all things Mizzou football. And outside of that, you got me, and we are going to give you an opportunity to chime in today as well. If you want to call or text, the phone number is 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. If you want to tweet at me, you can do that at Matt Pauly on air, MattPauley on air. Or if you want to send a message on the video stream, for those of you who are watching on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, you can just leave a comment in the chat, and we will get to that as we move along here on the program tonight. First and foremost, that World Series game last night was awesome. And Kevin and I talked about it a bunch during the during Rush Hour Sports. I don't know about you. I was not going to bed on that one. And that's one of those games that you remember forever. And I love the games where there are so many moments in the game that stand out. Where, you know, I talk so often about the stories of games, and I love the games that have stories that go along with them. Well, it wasn't just a single story in last night's game. That was a full chapter book of things that ended up happening. And that is baseball at its best. And it wasn't always baseball being played at its best. There were some mistakes that were made. There were some questionable decisions, some questionable base running, some you know, lineup moves as the game went along. So it's not that game, there were times that there were elite level plays that were being made. There were times that there were not. So it's not that when I say that's baseball at its best, it's not that it was at the whole time being played at its best. It was baseball at its best in the sense that every pitch mattered so much. I say this a lot, and I get pushback on it sometimes. And I think I've got a pretty good track record of somebody who loves baseball. I've basically committed my career to the sport of baseball. I have a deep love for it. Major League Baseball has the widest range of how good it is, how entertaining it is, or how unentertaining it is. If you're comparing, with all due respect to soccer, if you're comparing the four major North American sports of football, hockey, basketball, baseball, I think like a football and a basketball, they're more, you kind of know what you're going to get. The difference between a really good NFL game and a really bad NFL game, there's a difference. I'm not telling you there's not, but it's not like this huge difference. Of a bad NFL game, you turn it on, there's still a pretty good chance you're going to sit there and watch it. It's still pretty darn entertaining. in baseball, when you get baseball at its absolute best, where every single pitch matters and just the drama and everything that goes along with it, in my incredibly humble opinion, it's the best. Nothing compares to it. Football at its best, basketball at its best, hockey at its best. Actually, hockey might actually be the one that's closest to it, just in the sense that you get into playoff hockey, that changes, and it feels and looks so much different than the regular season. But baseball at its best is amazing. Baseball at its worst, you get a terrible baseball game on a Tuesday night in June with 12,000 people in the stands and a guy pitching who's supposed to be a AAA. Like, it's just, that can be unentertaining and non-compelling. So that's what I mean by that. Like, bad baseball is sometimes really, really not fun to take in. But baseball at its best, and especially in the playoffs and now in the World Series, you're going to get it at its best more often than not. And I had so much fun watching that. I'm just curious what's going to happen tonight, because yesterday's game is one of those games that absolutely is going to carry over to today and carry over to tomorrow as well. There are very few scenarios in the playoffs because of the number of off days where it's like the regular season that pitching can really impact from one day to the next. Because, you just have so many off days built in. You're always pretty fresh, almost always pretty fresh. Well, yesterday, playing that game, seeing the teams go through their respective bullpens the way they were going, the Dodgers were talking about using a position player to pitch. Dave Roberts told which reporter on the Fox broadcast was on the Dodgers side. Was it Rosenthal or was it Verducci? Anyways, I think it was Verducci, but I could be wrong. If you're watching, the report was that Roberts had said it's going to be a position player as the next pitcher. And we'll see how long we can go until we get to that point. And then evidently, Yamamoto, 2 days removed from throwing a complete game, went up and said, or through his translator, went up and said, I can pitch. If you need me, I can pitch, which is incredible. That's awesome. That's such a cool story. And even just the optics, the visuals of seeing Yamamoto up warming in that game, I'm a little bummed that they didn't get to that point to have him come in, because that would have just added to the story. But even him being willing, even him taking it upon himself to say, I'll pitch, let me take the ball, we don't need to use a position player, let me take the ball. Great story, great part of it. And now we'll see how it plays out tonight, because both teams are going to have depleted bullpens. There's going to be a lot of pressure on the respective starting pitchers. It's going to be Shane Bieber who's going for Toronto, and then Shohei is going to go for the Dodgers. We'll see what tonight ends up looking like, but looking forward to seeing that. And we'll keep you updated on that game as we go along. We're still about an hour away from first pitch. We'll talk some Blues hockey. They are going to be in action tonight as well. They are hosting Detroit over across the street at the Enterprise Center after just another bad loss yesterday. They've given up 7 goals, 6 goals, and 6 goals over their last 3 games. The Blues are in a bad spot right now. We'll see if they can turn that around tonight against a Detroit team that they just had a 4-0 lead against on Saturday and ended up losing that game and not being able to hold on to the lead. So we'll talk some Blues hockey as we go through the night as well. Again, if you want to join us, 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. That's how you call, that's how you text. You can tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air, and you can leave a message on the video chat as well. We will take a break and have more in just a moment. Benjamin Hockman joins us after this as we roll on with the Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
It's football season, and you got to keep up with the action. Listen in to Pushing the Pile, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network with Mike Renner, Kyle Long, and now me, JP Acosta, for smart analysis of everything between the lines. With 4 episodes a week, Sunday night recaps, film review, power tiers, and weekly previews, you will know ball. Stick with us until one team lifts the Lombardi. Follow and listen to Pushing the Pile on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back in. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Very happy to go to the guest line right now. I would really encourage you to, well, you should read everything that Benjamin Hockman writes because he's awesome and he's really good at what he does. But I would especially encourage you to read his most recent column where he got the opportunity to sit down with the daughter of Don Dechinger and talk a little bit about Dechinger's legacy. And to talk about that column and a few other things, we welcome Benjamin Hockman onto the program. Thanks for coming on. How are you?
I'm doing well, Matt. I heard you crushed it at the Ladue Sports Hall of Fame as the MC.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I tried to get some Clayton shots in there, and it didn't really come, but there were some other people who were able to do so.
That's good.
So Frank Cusimano was the did a video for one of the inductees, and he starts talking DeSmet stuff at the Ladue. Oh. So, come on, Frank. You can't do that.
Yeah. Come on. That's a different ball game. Yeah, come on.
All right, so... whenever I talk to people about stuff they write, I like getting into some of the details of it, but I don't want to give so much away that people don't go read it. So I like finding out some of the story behind it. So you sat down with the daughter of Don Dechinger. Explain how that happened, where that connection was, and why you wrote this now. Just kind of the origin story of this column. What is it?
Yeah, I mean, as a journalist, you know, as a columnist, I'm often writing my opinion about the Blues this, Mizzou that, Cardinals this, you know, SLU that. But I like to tell stories, and especially St. Louis sports history stories. And this summer when the Cardinals played the Royals, I was like, okay, Royals, Cardinals, 85. I should write something looking back. So I reached out to Dechinger's daughter. Dechinger, of course, the umpire who blew the call in the ninth inning of Game 6. Of the World Series at Kansas City, and she said she's actually coming to St. Louis in October of 2025, and I'm like, are you kidding me? What are the odds, right, of all the weeks? She came the anniversary of the World Series, so we went to Caldy's in Central West End and sat down, and she was just great. She opened up, and really, her goal was the same as mine, was to kind of paint the picture of Don Dechinger, the man, not just the man who made the call.
And she's her name's Denise. She lives in Waterloo, Iowa, from what I gleaned from your column. Is there anything that she said that really surprised you or shocked you, or was it stuff you kind of knew but you wanted to be able to give somebody else the forum to tell the story?
Well, the thing that was the biggest, pun intended, curveball for me was during our conversation, she just starts taking off a piece of jewelry, one of her rings, and she hands it to me. And I'm like, what do we got here? And she goes, it's the ring they gave to the umpires who did the 1985 World Series. And my first thought, and I was embarrassed by it, was how can someone in the Dechinger family wear something that commemorates the 1985 World Series? He, for all intents and purposes, blew it. You know, he blew the call at first base, and the Cardinals proceeded to blow Game 6 and then Game 7 as well. But as we talked more, I realized that that ring was a representation of her father's career. We're talking about a guy who started in 1969 as an umpire in the major leagues and finished in 1998. He did four World Series. He was a very well-respected umpire, and she, you know, it's one. He had a terrible night, but it was just one bad night in an amazing career.
You finish off the column where you mentioned the fact that she showed you a video of some of the belongings of her dad, and you mentioned a piece of framed art. I remember seeing a TV story about him, and I think I can see in my head the piece of art, of kind of a cartoonish sort of look, if it's the same one that I remember in my head. And it's a cartoon representation or artistic representation of the safe call in that moment. And I thought it was interesting to what you just said when you asked why would he have that on the wall. She said, because it's part of the history.
Yeah, it's part of the story, and that tells us a lot about the man, right? He didn't hide from his failure. It's still him umping the World Series. I mean, that's a pretty amazing accomplishment. Think about how many people are umping the, you know, Olivet Athletic Association right now, and to sort of think this guy is doing did the World Series four times. And but yeah, he felt he was devastated by the call. He of course dealt with hell. They got phone calls and letters in the mail that were some death threats. I mean, it was just terrible what the family went through in 1985. But as the years and decades went on, he wore it. He knew he was the guy that made the call, but he also was so proud of what he'd accomplished in his career that he was able to kind of find a balance and I guess a little levity by having that on the wall.
I also thought it was interesting in the sense that she brought up the fact that as she kind of honors her dad and looks back on her dad, not only did baseball give him a lot of great things, it also took away from the family a little bit. Anybody who works in sports, and certainly umpires who are on the road all night in summer, there is a cost to that from a family standpoint.
My favorite thing to do as a writer is tell a story that hasn't been told and find the humans within the sports story and share their stories with the readers of St. Louis. And even in tomorrow's paper, I'm doing a piece on this great cornerback for the Indianapolis Colts who's from St. Louis, Jonathan Edwards. But I interviewed his mom, and she talked about the homelessness that they unfortunately endured for 5 months and how that perseverance helped make Jonathan Jonathan. And when you look at Don Denkinger's daughter, I mean, yeah, here's someone who was so proud of dad. He was the man. He was a major league umpire. But when she needed a hug from dad, he was in, you know, San Diego or Toronto or wherever he was sometimes for work. He lived like a businessman, a traveling salesman's life. And unfortunately, she didn't get to have the full childhood she desired.
We're talking with Benjamin Hockman again. You can read that story. Post-Dispatch, head to stltoday.com to check that out. Just a couple more things with you before we let you go. From a Mizzou standpoint, that was a really, really challenging loss this past weekend because not only do they lose an opportunity to beat a top 10 team on the road and make the path to a potential college football playoff berth easier, they lose their quarterback, but they also gain a guy in Matt Zollers who we got to see who did a nice job. We'll see what it looks like against Texas A&M. But how do you sort of, from 30,000 feet, evaluate where this Missouri football program is at right now?
I mean, I'm pretty pessimistic. I mean, I just feel so bad for them to have two guys in Cook, or excuse me, not Cook, Sam Horn, and now Prabula to get injured to end their season. And now you've got to rely on a freshman who is 18 years old and didn't play much high school football his senior year because of an injury. Now, we watched the game. He looked poised out there. He didn't look 18 years old, or he didn't look like a freshman out there, but that was one half of football with a lot of adrenaline going. Now, he's got to face the number three team in the nation, Texas A&M. It's just such a huge mountain to climb for Mizzou to make the college football playoff now, and the fact that they would have to beat both Oklahoma and Texas A&M, among others, to do so, it just seems to use the mountain pun, insurmountable.
I saw there were some odds that were put out on who the next head coach at LSU was going to be, and Eli Drinkwitz had the fifth best odds to be the next coach at LSU. What's your confidence level right now that Drink is locked in and is going to stay at Missouri?
Well, I'll defer to another Eli. That's Eli Hoff of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, my friend and colleague.
Can I pause you real quick? Because his lead on his game story was amazing this past weekend.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's all. Just a sidebar on that. Go ahead.
He's Eli Hoff, and he's young, too. It's great to have such a young, hungry reporter at the Post-Dispatch like Eli Hoff. And he wrote a piece recently about Mizzou's dedication to Drinkwitz, and Drinkwitz himself said that fans don't have anything to worry about. So money talks, we know that. But, I mean, the big question for Drinkwitz would be, like, if the money is similar at LSU and Mizzou, is it worth the jump, or can he accomplish what he thinks he can accomplish and wants to accomplish at the University of Missouri-Columbia? And I think that's where his mindset is.
Can he accomplish everything at Mizzou that he could at those other places?
I mean, sure. Why? I mean, let's look at this. Let's say Bo Prabula doesn't get hurt in that game. I mean, they almost tied that game, right? There's a Hail Mary caught on the 1-inch line. That if they had scored that, they got the field goal, they go to overtime, right? So they might have won that game with Matt Zollers. My point is, if Prabula doesn't get hurt and he's the quarterback, you know, I'm suddenly confident that this team can make a run towards the playoff. And that's this year. So let's look ahead to the following years. Yeah, I think Drinkwitz has Mizzou in a spot where they can take the next step and make a college football playoff in the next 3 years. But I thought this was going to be the year, and unfortunately it probably won't be.
Lane Kiffin's having those exact same thoughts. I would think, oh, who knows what Lane is thinking, and he gets a kick out of all this for sure. But he's third on that list, by the way, that I just mentioned. Drink is fifth. Kiffin is third, but it feels like of everything, Kiffin's got to make a decision here before the rest of the dominoes can start falling.
Yeah, no, he is such a fascinating persona in college football. And the fact that his daughter is dating a player on LSU only makes it crazier and complicates things a little bit more. But I don't know. He's got Ole Miss rolling down there, and there's a lot to like about his situation there. And for someone in Kiffin's career who's bounced around so much to finally have this opportunity to plant his flag and just be somewhere for a while, I'm sure that's enticing to him.
Yeah, I mean, just the way he's lost some of these jobs too. Like, at some point, the loyalty, I know it's college football and loyalty doesn't seem to matter at all, but I talked about origin story earlier, considering his story, you would think that there'd be a loyalty might play out a little bit more for him than some other coaches out there.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's really well said. Good job.
Thank you. He is, and on that note, I'm going to let you go because I'll leave on a compliment for me. Benjamin Hockman, read him in the Post-Dispatch and at STL Today. Thank you so much for the time. Hopefully, we'll see each other soon.
Always fun being on KMOX. Take care, man.
All right, very good. Benjamin Hockman joining us here on the program. Appreciate him taking a few moments with us. We've got a lot of time to get to a few things before we're done today. We're going to go all the way till 8 o'clock this evening. We'll continue to circle back to baseball. We will talk some St. Louis Blues hockey. In fact, we'll do that coming up in just a moment or so. And then we are going to also, the sports betting thing had another wrinkle thrown into it today. Because there's a lot going on. Obviously, there was the arrests that were made, connection to the NBA. But the other side of the sports betting story that's going on right now is the NCAA is going to start allowing people connected to the NCAA to bet on sports that they're not connected to. And now with everything happening, there's been some pushback on that. So we'll touch on that story a little bit later on as well. Don't go anywhere. You are locked into a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. Welcome back into the program. My name is Matt Pauly, taking you until 8 o'clock this evening. Blues are in action tonight. We'll see what they do. It is not going especially well for them. At some point, they are going to respond to the adversity. All professional sports teams do. Hopefully it is tonight. They have lost four in a row, five of their last six. They're giving up a ton of goals. They've given up, 19 goals in their last three games? It's just, it is not good. And then some news today that this is such a bummer for this team because not a lot of guys have been performing at a pretty high level. One guy who has been Jake Nabers. And Nabers is injured, and he is going to be out for at least 5 weeks. He's going to be reevaluated in 5 weeks. Blues had the team after playing on the road last night. They did not hold a morning skate this morning. Jim Montgomery did his pregame media session with the team just a little while ago. So I haven't really gotten the chance to hear everything that he said, but we got the audio of it. I wanted to play a little bit of it for you. So this is the first thing. This is him talking specifically about Nabers, and it's going to be him answering, kind of where they go, and then a couple more questions and his answers on that. But this is overall how he's feeling with the news that the team is going to be without Jake Nabers here for over a month.
Well, you lose, a player that is one of your heart and soul guys, a guy that as a coach is going to bring effort and competitive spirit every night to your group, pulls guys into the fight. It's obviously a big loss. And we're just going to have to, next guy up mentality and be able to pull through while, he gets on the mend.
It's tough to overcome because of the things he works so
hard
to be collective guys
and
have to pick up what
he needs to do, I guess. Yeah, I mean, it's, guys like, he's our leading scorer right now, but what he brings, the intangibles he brings to the dressing room and on the bench and on the ice, the little things he does to help build the team game, to help players have success, the dirty work. I mean, other guys got to absorb that role, Well, I think it's a combination of a bunch of people. It'd be like Mojo is going to have to do it. Snuggaroo to a certain degree, even though they're different type of players. Torpichenko, Walker, Sundqvist.
So that's where they're at right now when it comes to Neighbors. He has been placed on IR, and he's going to miss a while, which is a very disappointing situation for this team. They also continue to play without Robert Thomas. He's not going to be available tonight. He is listed as day-to-day, but he is obviously somebody that you want to have as well. So the way the lineup is going to look tonight, that top line, Pugh Suter is going to be that that top line center between Pavel Buchnevich and Jimmy Snuggerud. Braden Schenn is the second line center between Dylan Holloway and Jordan Kyrou. Oscar Sundquist is the third line center with Matthew Joseph and Texier. And then Nick Bjugstad is the fourth line center with Torpchenko and also Nathan Walker. And that's what they're going to be going here with moving forward. So obviously, a lot of adversity with this team right now. Montgomery was asked what he really wants to see from his team as they try to find themselves and become the team that most of us thought they would be this year.
I want to see guys lean into a challenge. Like, mentally, get after it, you know? Big saying here is LGB, and this one I say is LFG. You can figure out the acronym.
All right, I'll be honest with you. I had not heard that all the way, so we just got that audio. I was trying to edit it very quickly. I heard LFG, and my heart started to drop. I was looking at John. I'm like, are we going to have to hit the dump button here? What's going on? But we know, so there you go. That's where they're at right now, and I'm sure when he addressed the team, he did not have to censor himself. But I don't know. It's hard to have, like, this big, I'm not a hot take guy. I think for those of you who listen to me on a nightly basis, you know that I try to be more thoughtful in the way that I talk about things and take a step back and look at things from 30,000 feet. And I am very understanding and accepting of the trajectory in sports and how over the course, long seasons, there are good moments, there are not so good moments, all of that. So I stand by it, and I think the talent plays out and that the Blues are a very talented team and that they are still a team that's going to be a playoff team for sure. We've talked about it a lot. It's a really, really tough division, arguably the toughest division in hockey. It's a really tough conference as well. It's a lot less forgiving in the West than it is in the East, and they've got to deal with that. And that's why they spent so much time talking about the importance of getting off to a strong start this season when they were playing, what, five of their first seven games at home? And then they just didn't do much in any of those. Of those five games, they won once. They beat Dallas. It was a really good game. That Dallas win, to me, is their best performance of the year. Their most complete performance. And you saw that and you said, okay, this can be who this team is. They did everything that you want them to do in that game. What was the number one thing that we were talking about after that Dallas win? We were talking about what Jordan Kyrou was doing from a defensive standpoint, from a back-checking standpoint, where he was in there, and it was a complete game from him. If I remember correctly, I think he scored a goal in that game as well. So that was very often, fair or not fair, Jordan Kyrou is the he's the poster child for wherever the Blues are at. If things are going poorly, there are people who jump to blame Kyrou. And if things are going really well, probably Kyrou's going strong because when he's good, when he's scoring goals, the Blues tend to score goals. So just score wins, I should say, get wins. That's he more than any other player on the roster, other than maybe the goalies, but even with the goalies, I'll go back to what I originally said. More so than any other player. Because a lot of times when the Blues are playing poorly, we give a free pass to Jordan Binnington. And I'm not saying he doesn't deserve the free pass. I'm a Binnington guy. But he's one of the last people that we really look at. I think the narrative in the Blues' struggles in recent years has always been that Binnington is not getting the help that he needs in front of him. So Kyrou becomes that guy that we all lock in on, that we all focus on as being either the reason things are not going well, or it's obvious that he is contributing to wins. And that's why that Dallas victory becomes such a symbol of what this team can be, because it was a good win, and the guy that you really wanted to play at a high level in all facets of his game, and Kyrie's not exactly known for what he does when he doesn't have the puck, but he did a lot that night, And it feels like when he does that, he's able to lift everybody else up. Since that game, they had the 2-1 loss against the Kings in overtime where they just did not play well, and that was not a very good LA team that came in. And then they've given up 7-6 and 6 goals in their last three games, and that includes those games of, you know, the Utah game. They got down big early, had to pull the goalie, kind of fought their way back, and then didn't have enough. The Detroit game was get up big early. They're up 4-0 in the second period, and then all of a sudden, boom, just gone. It's done. They give up the final 6 goals, first 5 being, you know, the last one was an empty net, but 5 goals unanswered. And then yesterday, they're down 2-0 before you can blink. I'm sure a lot of people missed the first 2 goals of yesterday's game because they scored, Pittsburgh did, 39 seconds and 55 seconds into the game. It was 2-0 before the game was even 1 minute old. And to the Blues' credit, they would score 2 goals themselves in the first period, and it was a 2-2 game at the end of the first period, but then just Pittsburgh was able to impose their will over the final 2 periods, especially in the third period, where the Blues got beat 3-1 in that final period, ended up losing 6-3. So, man, there's not a lot going right with this team right now. That's where we go back to the Jake Neighbors thing. Because Neighbors was one of the things that was going right. Neighbors, you felt like every single night that he was playing, he was contributing from a positive standpoint. And now that is gone. So you lose that guy. And the question is, who's going to step up? Who's going to move forward? And maybe that ends up being a benefit. It depends on the reaction. And this Blues team does not always react the best in these type of situations. But we'll watch the reaction. So they've lost 4 in a row. They've given up 7 million goals in those games. And now they lose the guy who's really been leading the way. Well, is that the final punch in the face that you need to get going? And that's kind of what we just heard from Jim Montgomery talking about wanting to see this team react. And that's why he dropped the LFG in there. Because that's what has to happen. They got to go. They got to get going. They got to start playing better hockey. And we'll see if it happens tonight. This week, they're going to play 3 games. I guess 4 games, including yesterday. But they've got 3 games left this week. They've got Detroit tonight. They're going to be at home again tomorrow against Vancouver. So this run of a bunch of home games certainly continues. And then once they get into the weekend, they'll go to Columbus, back home against Edmonton. And then next week, they've got a couple road games on Wednesday and Thursday against Washington and Buffalo, respectively. 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. That's how you call. That's how you text. You can tweet at me as well if you'd like, at Matt Pauley on air, MattPauley on air. I mentioned earlier with Benjamin Hockman about the odds that are out there for coaching hires, and LSU is the most recent job to come open, but we're at a point with so many coaching positions that are open. This is going to be an every year thing. If you're Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin, if you're Missouri and Eli Drinkwitz, there's a handful of other coaches. If you're Iowa State and I'm trying to think of the guy's name off the top of my head, and it just left me. Matt Campbell. If you're Iowa State and Matt Campbell. It may be happening a little bit with Nebraska and Matt Rhule. If every single year as the coaching carousel starts, these guys' names are going to start getting brought up, and it's going to become a situation where every single year these athletic directors are going to be at a risk of losing their coach or being forced to go give them more money. We'll discuss that a little bit coming up in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. You are locked into a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
It's football season, and you got to keep up with the action. Listen in to Pushing the Pile, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network with Mike Renner, Kyle Long, and now me, JP Acosta, for smart analysis of everything between the lines. With 4 episodes a week, Sunday night recaps, film review, power tiers, and weekly previews, you will know ball. Stick with us until one team lifts the Lombardi. Follow and listen to Pushing the Pile on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Live. Once again, Matt Pauley on King of OX.
We are starting to wrap up hour number one of the show. Hour number two, we're going to talk Mizzou football. We've got a guest coming on who covers the Tigers, just where do they go from here with the quarterback situation as it is. And also want to get into, there's another angle to the sports gambling story that has emerged today. In fact, the commissioner of the SEC, Greg Sankey, wrote a letter to the NCAA encouraging them to make a shift in something that they were planning on doing. I'll explain all of that coming up in hour number two of the program. Before we do wrap up hour number one, I mentioned this earlier. So there are odds out there for who's going to be the next head coach at LSU. I mean, there's odds for who's going to be the next coach at Florida, at Penn State, yada, yada, yada. Like, that's out there. And as I look at the names, Lane Kiffin, to me, is the guy who sort of controls what's going on here. Kiffin's got to make the decision if he's going to stick around at Ole Miss or if he's going to pursue another job. It seems like Florida would be the better fit for Kiffin if he does decide to leave Ole Miss than LSU, but you never know. And it also depends on the kind of money that's being offered, even though Kiffin will tell you it has nothing to do with money. Eli Drinkwitz, he is a fifth on the odds. He has 8-1 odds to become the next head coach in case at LSU, in case you wonder. I don't like to just like yell and complain about stuff that bothers me without something that can be done to fix it. And I don't think there is anything that can be done to fix what's going on right now in college athletics. And I don't want to just repeat everything that I've said recently, because I've talked a lot about lately how uncomfortable and how much I don't like the fact that these coaching firings are happening in the middle of the season at the rate that they're happening. I'm not naive. I understand there are times to make coaching changes. And in fact, of all the coaching changes that have been made, the LSU Brian Kelly one bothered me the least. He was never a fit in Baton Rouge. That was a terrible hire from day number one. And I never really felt like he was somebody who had the best interest of the players in mind. And maybe it's a little bit utopian, but I do think about the athletes. I do think about the 18 to 22 year olds who come and make a decision that they want to play for a certain school and play for a certain coach. And that's why when Penn State fires James Franklin in the middle of the season, what are you really doing? You're not making the team better this year. You're giving players an extra opportunity to leave the program. And that's the way it is with most firings midseason. You're not actually making yourself better. And a lot of these coaches, like Lane Kiffin, his team's going to be in the college football playoff in all likelihood. He's not going to be making a decision on this until a long time after the season ends. What are you actually saying? What are you actually doing in this situation? So I don't know. It frustrates me to no end that this is going on the way it is going on, and I don't think it's going to change much here moving forward. We'll take a break. We got a lot more coming up in hour number two of the program here on KMOX.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
It's football season, and you got to keep up with the action. Listen in to Pushing the Pile, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network with Mike Renner, Kyle Long, and now me, JP Acosta, for smart analysis of everything between the lines. With 4 episodes a week, Sunday night recaps, film review, power tiers, and weekly previews, you will know ball. Stick with us until one team lifts the Lombardi. Follow and listen to Pushing the Pile on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.